The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello, and you're very welcome along to the Easter edition of the Home Show podcast coming up this week. I'll be chatting to Catherine Fitzgerald, co-owner of Glyn Castle with film star husband Dominic West and organiser of the Festival of Gardens and Nature. It is Easter weekend. We couldn't pass up the chance to be joined by a French master chocolatier. Supergarden returns to our TV screens next week. We'll catch up with one of the judges, and Home Show regular Jennifer Sheehan will be discussing all things yellow and Easter. If you'd like to get involved in our podcast, we love to hear from listeners. You can contact us by email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You can find me on X and on Instagram at SineadRyan100. The Festival of Gardens and Nature returns for the second year to Ballintubbert Gardens in County Laois. It takes place over the May Bank holiday weekend and is organised by Catherine Fitzgerald, gardener and co-owner of Glyn Castle in Limerick, with her husband, movie actor Dominic West. And Catherine joins me now. Tell us what inspired you to set up the festival in Ballintubbert.
Well, I set it up with Minnie Preston, my collaborator, my partner, and we're both passionate about the subject. We love growing and gardening and believe very much in organic growing, and we also felt that it's the right time and that a lot of younger people are coming to it. They're concerned about their environment, about gardening in a more natural way. So we tend to come to gardening when we're older, maybe traditionally we think of that, but I think it's becoming a growing interest. You know, garden design is incredibly dynamic at the moment, where there's so much going on in outside spaces and people wanting to enjoy that and be in their gardens. And then there's the kind of, you know, it's such a sustaining hobby, and I think more people are coming to it. So it seemed like the right moment for us to do something. And we wanted to create a really immersive event that wasn't just, that it was kind of food for the mind as well as food for the soul. It was, you know, talks where you learned a lot, share ideas, meet the speakers, but also a really fun weekend out where people can meet and chat and have lovely organic food and coffee and buy books about gardening. And it's set at Ballintubbert House, the most lovely venue.
It is indeed. It sounds very, very tempting altogether. And tell us a little bit about what visitors can expect there, because I know you mentioned workshops there and authors and food and drink. Yeah. So what kind of activities will be on?
Well, we're actually new to this year. Last year was our first year. New to this year is some more practical stuff, how-to workshops, because after all, gardening is practical, and we wanted to make sure that people could get the chance to learn something and go home and actually do something in their garden. We've got Sarah Jenkinson making a fantastic willow woven plant supports, which I really want to do that. We've got Klaus Leitenberger talking about soil health. You know, it's all about the soil is so important, compost making, and there's a bit of a mystery to it, but Klaus is going to show us a bit about that. We've got a dawn chorus walk from Sean Renane, followed by porridge from the Merry Mill. It's a really, there's just lots to it. It's not just the talks and there's lots of more experiential things going on.
Indeed. And you've managed to secure some fairly significant names for the weekend activities. I mean, we have Jamie Walton, we've our own Doreena Allen, and yep, Nigel Slater. So
I know.
A big coup there.
Yeah, big coup. Couldn't believe it. So we're pinching ourselves. We've got a great lineup. We've got Diarmaid, of course. And so we've got Dominic, my husband's interviewing Niall Williams, the writer, and Christine Breen. We've got Thomas Pakenham, the tree guru, Sally O'Halloran. We've got Kenneth Keevey, who's so fantastic on organic growing. So we've got Johnny Flynn, the folk musician, in the evening for a bit of entertainment after the talks. And so it's a lovely wide range of people.
Indeed, and very loads and loads on if you're going with a gardener. So in a lot of couples, as we know, you'd have, you know, one who is absolutely addicted to the gardening and loves the planting and that, and then, you know, they may have a spouse who loves the end results but isn't as interested. So they can go to the talks and the interviews and all of that. So plenty on there now. So when you pull together something like this, I mean, it's clearly a very passion project. I can hear that in your voice because you are, of course, a landscape gardener yourself. And this is obviously something that you adore. But it takes an awful lot of work to kind of put the jigsaw together, does it?
It does. It does. The first year we did it, we kind of started at Christmas and it happened at the end of April and it just, we had to go flat out. But this year we've had a bit more time. And Minnie, my partner, who is on the ground at Ballintubber, she is fantastic and has been doing a lot of all the organising and logistics and putting it all together. And, you know, things pop up, people drop out. There's all sorts of things.
But of course,
it's actually gone quite smoothly and it's all coming together. And then there's the social media and there's all that. There's lots of different elements, but it's quite fun.
Great.
And to everything.
And of course, people can go for one day or for the full weekend.
Yeah.
Your ticket prices here, just correct me if I'm wrong, 110 for the Saturday, 70 for the Sunday or 165 for a full weekend ticket. Catherine, can people stay locally then or are you kind of building in the B&Bs and hotels around the place?
Absolutely. I think that's the people that just have a Google and, you know, Port Leash and B&Bs around. And if they would love to come for both days, that would be great. And one day you get the whole feel of it as well.
Wonderful. And of course, the Home Show Gardener, our own Dermot Gavin, will also be there, as you mentioned. So I know our listeners like him a great deal. So that'll be very interesting. Now, when we last spoke on the Home Show, you told us about your own home, Glyn Castle, and it's how it has progressed as a kind of a venue for events, for weddings, for parties. Yeah. How is that all going? And what's it like having your home invaded by guests at the weekend?
Well, no, it's going great actually, and it's the thing about it. The house was built in the 1780s, and it was built with entertaining in mind. And although the couple who built it, my ancestors, the 23rd night of Glyn and his wife went bankrupt shortly after, they wanted to make a splash and they wanted to have parties and music. And so the house was arranged. It needs to have people to make it feel alive. You know, big houses feel a bit dead if they're not really being used. So it's really coming into its own as a venue. And there's a sort of little wing bit added on where you can, you know, family can retreat to if it's, you know.
Or too much.
You know, we welcome people. We really want it to become part of local community and to open up to more and more events. And the garden is very much part of that. It's a wonderful theatre for, you know, weddings. People really enjoy it. So I have an excuse to indulge my unfortunate obsession.
You do indeed. And I know that you planted much of the gardens at Glyn and you have a beautiful walled garden there. And is it always a work in progress, Catherine?
Yeah, I think gardening always is, because unlike kind of decorating a house, you know, it's always changing. That's the thing about gardens. And I think with sort of historic houses and gardens, they'll always be visited by people who actually want to go back each season and see what the new season brings, you know, whether it's, you know, autumn colour or spring or bulbs coming up. Gardens are always changing. And the wonderful thing about gardening is you can dig things up and move them around. You haven't ever really made a bad mistake. You can just change. It's very liberating as a creative art form.
Indeed it is. And I know that you also spend much of your time in Wiltshire, in England. How often do you get home to Glyn, or how do you divide that up? I mean, it must be very difficult juggling your career, your husband Dominic West's career. You have, what, four children?
Yeah.
So, like, how do you split that up and make sure that you get to see each other and as much of everything as possible?
Yeah, somehow it does work, though life can be quite crazy. My mum is 100% of her time at Glyn and holds the fort, and I have a lovely manager and helper there. So I've managed to set it up. I'm there every month, back and forth, and there for holidays with the kids. And then, yeah, I've got my work in the UK and also in Ireland. Did a big project at Hill, kind of reimagining the Hillsborough Gardens up in the north, which was sort of 5 years traveling up there. So I kind of make it work. And I love I love Ireland. I love, you know, my life there, and I'm not going to give it up. Dominic's here. His work is mainly here or in the States, but somehow it does work. The kids love, you know, love their holidays, and so it's that's how it is. Hopefully in the end I can move back to Glen.
Indeed. And you mentioned there Hillsborough, because I know that Dermot Gavin, who of course is a Home Show regular here, he planted the King's Garden, which was a massive project for him as well. So I'm curious if you kind of did any work together, or because that whole coronation year was absolutely crazy, you know. And of course, you had an added, addendum to it, in that your husband, Dominic West, was in The Crown. So there's a lot of kind of interlocking pieces there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Well, I was involved with Hillsborough. It was kind of pre all of that. It was quite a while ago. Probably was it 10 years ago? And I didn't actually cross over with Dermot, and my involvement there was well and truly over by the time.
Good. Well. You'll catch up with them again anyway at this festival, which is on over the Maybank holiday. And where can people find out more and book that, Catherine?
Yeah, well, through Eventbrite, and also the website, Festival of Gardens and Nature. Just look that up. You'll get the whole schedule, all the talks, all the other lovely things going on. Have a Google of that and Eventbrite. Yeah,
that's fantastic. And listen to me, what's next for you after all this? A well-earned rest, or have you another project on the way?
Oh, God. Well, straight after the festival, I'm taking a garden tour around Limerick, down to Kerry. And then we have an event at Glyn welcoming lots of local corporate businesses, hoping to spread the word about what we can offer. So it's really not slowing down.
Certainly not. I'll tell you what, you're one woman for a woman. Listen to me, do your kids, your children, have they kind of got the green finger bug from you, or the acting bug from Dominic?
Oh, God, there's a bit of both. Gosh, who knows which. The youngest one, I'm glad, is my gardening one, is growing snapdragons and is always in the greenhouse and loves it. The others, absolutely not. They're into music, art, acting. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I've got one.
What can you expect, you know, with all that creativity abounding in your family? Listen, you're lucky with one, so you'll take it.
Well, I'll take that.
All right. Well, listen, Catherine Fitzgerald, it's been a pleasure as always to talk to you. I hope the festival goes brilliantly for you, and I hope you get the weather and everything is lovely. And there's so much going on there that even the non-gardeners will have a great time there. So that is the Festival of Gardens and Nature, Ballintubbert Gardens and House in Laois, Saturday, 2 weeks, Saturday and Sunday, the 3rd and 4th of May. Yeah. A nice bank holiday there. All right, Catherine Fitzgerald, thank you so much for joining us on The Home Show.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, of course, it is Easter weekend, and what better time to celebrate chocolate in all of its forms? Well, joining me now for a very special item is Benoit Lourge. Lourge, is that right?
Right,
okay. A French master chocolatier who set up his chocolate business over 20 years ago. You're very welcome to studio.
Hi, good morning, Sinead.
On a busy weekend for you, I'm sure. Now, you've brought in kind of some bits and pieces here, which we'll get to in a minute. But tell me a little bit about your journey first. You are in Kenmare. I'm not detecting a Kenmare accent.
No, despite that I've been in Kerry for the last 28 years, but I'm coming from France originally.
Yes. And tell me what brought you to Kenmare.
So my background is pastry. I'm a pastry chef. And I came in 2000 to take a position as a pastry chef in Sheen Falls Lodge, an hotel, a five-star hotel in Kenmare.
Beautiful hotel.
And absolutely love the place. I stayed for 6 years there. And in 2004... I start to set up as well my business making chocolate because I love Kenmare.
Now, the Irish, of course, Benoit, are very good customers of chocolate. We really like it, even though we've none of the ingredients here that we grow. Talk to me about how much chocolate we eat.
So in Ireland, Irish are the third consumer in the world with 17 kilo of chocolate per person per year.
17 kilo. I'm not sure I've quite managed that. Maybe somebody else is having half my portion.
No, obviously, that's not talking only about artisan chocolate. We're talking about all the chocolate bar in supermarket. Mm. So what will be good is to get the people to eat maybe less chocolate, but better quality.
Talk to me a little bit about chocolate, the constituents. I know it's very, very ancient, Aztecs or, you know, Mexican tribes.
The history said that cocoa beans were originally in Mexico by the Aztecs using as a currency. But after that, one thing is sure, it starts to prove, but one thing is sure, they were using this cocoa, crushing with boiling water to make something who will be the ancestor of the hot chocolate. Mm. This was not used as a pleasure, but as a medicine. So they knew way before us the virtue of cocoa.
Okay. And of course it spread and Columbus brought it over to Europe and then we started fiddling around with it and adding sugar and all sorts of, of tastes.
That's correct, yes. The first European to see and touch cocoa beans was Christopher Columbus. He took note, but it was more interesting in Golden Woman. So he actually never brought cocoa beans. We had to wait another 50 years that another Spanish called Manuel Cortes bring back the cocoa beans to Europe.
Right. And from that, here we are with, you know, the Star Bar and the Dubai chocolate. I don't know the civilization has moved on quite so much. What have you brought in with you here?
So I brought you first like a cocoa pod, just for you to see what is the actual plants.
It's big, isn't it?
Yes, there's different sizes and different variety that I can explain you if you're interested. But yeah, it's
about the size of an aubergine. I thought it'd be much smaller.
Yes, and it can go the color from a green to yellow to a red color, depending the variety of the cocoa. As in the wine, you got Merlot, Cabernet, Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. We got the same in cocoa. You got different type as well.
Okay. And talk to me about then how our tastes have changed in the 20 years you've been in Ireland. What are people enjoying now in chocolate versus when you came here first?
I'll say, Jeanette, when I started the business here 20 years ago, I will say 80% of my sales will be milk chocolate. Mm. Now, 20 years later, I will say I'll sell probably more dark chocolates than milk chocolate. So there's been really like a conscious of the people that dark chocolate is more healthy for the people. That's the real chocolate as well. And maybe moving a bit more from the sugar test. Mm. Now, still milk chocolate is still very popular, but the people really has been moving into chocolate a bit more bitter and also more interesting about the single origin and better quality.
Okay, so we've got notions now about the chocolate.
Probably people are eating a bit less, but better quality.
Okay. And what flavours are you finding popular? Because I know you add everything from, you know, spices and floral fragrances and all sorts in your chocolate.
Yeah, the magic of chocolate, you can actually mix chocolate with all the kind of spices, herb, citrus, berries. But here in Ireland, really like the most popular is caramel.
Really?
If you don't have like salted caramel, you're closing the business. Well, at the moment, there's the Dubai chocolate bar, but that's going to be gone probably soon. But caramel is really, really like the Irish number one
is
flavor.
Is it? And, yes. And is it that mix of the salt? I mean, we do sea salt so well in Ireland.
Yes.
And is it that just juxtaposition of flavors between that intense sugar and the saltiness?
Yeah, bringing a bit of salt into the chocolate just... into the caramel, pop up the flavor a bit. And as you said, there's not a lot of Irish ingredient we can use in chocolate, but actually for the salt, I'm using a sea salt from West Cork. Mm. Beautiful sea salt. So yeah, chocolate and sea salt has been very popular at the moment.
Right. Okay, good to know. We've moved on. Would you say we're more sophisticated now in our choices of chocolate in the same way that maybe our wine has changed as well? You know, we know a little bit more now. People have travelled. They've discovered different things.
Yeah. I tell you, I'm in Ireland since 1998 and... I'm not talking only about the chocolate. The evolution, the food in Ireland has just been explosive. Mm. I'm talking about like the quality of the coffee is excellent everywhere. Now we got the fish that we maybe... having more or less here in Ireland on exporting the quality of the restaurant, the quality of the... but yes, the taste has really been changing, and people are really, I will say, less plain and more adventurous and tasting different flavor.
Now, talk to me a little bit about the process that you undertake when you're making your very special chocolate, because it, you know, there's several stages to it and it is quite complicated. So tell me how you go about that.
Okay, so some people go from beans to bar, which is not what I'm doing. That means they go really like from the beans to the fermentation, the roasting process, crushing and making the paste before to transform the chocolate. What I'm doing, I'm not going to the cocoa plant. I have my chocolate company who designed the chocolate for me. I receive it in block. I melt, I bring the chocolate at the right temperature for a process that we call the tempering. It's technically, it's scientific, it's just good crystallization of the molecules of the cocoa butter. When the chocolate is at the right temperature, we put inside the mold, let the crystallization, and we can remove from the mold after a few hours. If some chocolate, if it's for the bonbon, we need to add like a filling, and after coating again with chocolate. There's different techniques. The world of chocolate is very wide.
Indeed. Now, you also offer chocolate courses down in your firm in Kenmare. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I can see some of them on the website. They're already sold out.
Yeah, yes, that's very exciting. So I'm running like a professional classes, a 1 day and a 2 day class, and I'm taking only 3 persons for the whole weekend. So that's more technical, but we do a lot like of workshop. That's mean I'm taking some private family. It can go from 1 to 6, 8 person, and for 2 hours we're having a bit of fun and hands on, and we're making chocolate, and that's really
and they get to eat what they've made then.
not all of it, but a good bit of it. Yeah.
Now I'm looking here, beautiful packaging that you have, and these colours, bright orange, turquoise, hard to miss.
Yes, that's our colour.
Yeah. That's your colour, and it's absolutely lovely. So talk to me about favourite flavours. You brought in a little egg for me. Let's have a look at it there now, a little Easter egg. And
I brought it in dark chocolate. I hope you like that.
Dark chocolate. Well, that's, I mean, it is good for you, isn't it?
Yes.
Almost healthy.
No, we can talk for hours about that. It has been proved that consuming some dark chocolate, a good dark chocolate, is actually good for you. Cocoa is one of the strongest antioxidants. It regulates the blood flow in your body, it releases the blood pressure, and also decreases cholesterol. So obviously it can prevent heart disease.
Right, there you go. You've heard it first now. Never mind Alive and Kicking Claire McKenna.
But like every good thing, I suppose, it's all about quantity.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. So to be health benefit, normally you should eat about 25 grams of chocolate a day. So just a bit over under an ounce. Or if you want, like about 3 squares of chocolate.
Okay. And how many grams is this now?
You got like the smaller size that I have. That's if it's a low, it's 100 gram Easter eggs. If it's filled with 5 truffles, that will be 160 grams.
Right, enough waffling. I'm going to open it now. I'm going to crack it open. Now, Benoit, is there a trick? Is there a trick to cracking this open appropriately?
Oh, there's no trick. It's just a pleasure just to take the eggs and smash it.
Smash it?
Yeah,
well,
smash
here
it.
We go. You said it.
Here we go.
There it is.
And you can see you've got a surprise inside. A little bag with 5 truffles.
And we have 5 truffles. Well, isn't that wonderful? That's all over my notes. Let me take a little taste now, because I must say I do like
that. That's a 72% dark chocolate. Beans from Ecuador in Mexico.
And beautifully painted. It's like a work of art here. It's absolutely gorgeous. Tell me, what's your favorite flavor?
I'm a dark chocolate person. I like dark chocolate and raspberry. I like the mix of the acidity of the raspberry or the passion fruits with the bitterness of chocolate.
Wonderful. Very happy Easter to you. I know it's a very, very busy time, and for taking the trouble of coming up all the way from Kenmare. That is Benoit Lorge with his fabulous chocolates. And you can find all of that on your website, which is?
www.lorge.ie.
Fantastic.
So we have an online shop and you can... Order nationwide.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for coming in on the home show this special weekend.
Thank you very much for welcoming.
For bringing in all of these goodies as well, Benoit. Now, the very popular Super Garden returns to RTE on next Tuesday, the 22nd of April, with the series running for 6 weeks. And the winning garden gets a place at Bloom. Carol Marks is a new-ish judge on the show and is joining me now to talk about the series and perhaps giving us a few tips for the green fingered out there in a little while. Carol, you're very welcome along to the Home Show.
Thank you so much, Sinead, for having me.
It's not your first stint at judging, or is it?
No, I was involved in judging on Super Garden last year. It was my first time on the programme, and I was mentoring the contestants as well in terms of planting. But I also judge for the RHS in the UK at Chelsea and Hampton Court.
Oh, there's posh for you now.
No, it's a privilege. It really is a privilege.
Yeah, well, certainly every time the Chelsea show runs around, we usually have Dermot Gavin in, a couple of gardeners who are displaying stuff. And it's, God, the effort they put into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible.
It's just extraordinary. All right. Well, look, tell me a little bit about yourself, how, you know, your journey, as they say, and how you ended up as a judge on Super Garden.
Okay. I suppose I have an interesting enough journey, Sinead. I've always been a lover of plants and gardens and nature. And I kind of was hooked when my mum gave me my first packet of seeds to sow when I was about 7. And I just sprinkled them in the ground underneath my window, my bedroom window. And it was night scented stock, a bit of a straggly plant, but it has the most amazing scent. So I saw them growing and blooming, and I would lie in my bed and I could smell the flowers in my bed when I was going to sleep at night. So it just hooked me straight away.
Right, that whole sensory feeling.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. So I just became very interested in plants and gardening. My mum was really green-fingered, you know. Now, we didn't have a fantastically huge garden, or it wasn't very manicured. There were 5 of us in the house, children. So it was our playground. But mum loved plants, so she definitely inspired me. So much so that when I was about 15, 16, when I was doing my, what was then the Intercert, mm-hmm. I applied for an apprenticeship with Dublin City Council in the National Botanic Gardens.
Right. So that was right up your alley then.
Yeah. But I wasn't successful at that time. And so I did my Leaving Cert, went on into the civil service, got married and had my children. And it was only years later when I was at a plant fair in the Botanic Gardens. The students had a plant fair every year. I got chatting with one of the students, and she was a mature student. So she filled me in on her journey and the fact that you could apply as a mature student, which I wasn't aware of. So I thought about it for a while and I was thinking it would be so nice to do it. Now, at this stage, my children were in their early teens, and my mum really encouraged me. And then she passed away about a year later, and I kind of realised she was only 63.
Gosh.
So I realised that life is just too short to do what you really want to do. And I applied as a mature student and I was successful. And I started in 1998 in the September at 36 years of age.
Wow. Well, do you know what? Isn't that a fantastic story and inspiration for other people who are in the same situation? Always had a passion, didn't work out the first time, and they took a left turn later in life. And by the way, at a very young age, when there's still lots that you can do. Mm. So your work then, in your career then, involved private design, or what type of work did you do once you got out of that?
Sure. So after the 3-year course, which was a higher diploma in horticulture, design was part of it. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, and I wasn't in a position, because I had a family at home, I wasn't sure what direction I was going to go in. So I worked 3 days a week in a private garden out in Blackrock in County Dublin, a 4-acre garden. That was fantastic. It was really challenging because of where it was, right beside the coast. I also designed some small private gardens, and I wrote for the Irish Garden magazine for a number of years, for about 6 years.
Well, a very varied career and that brought you around about back to RTE's attention and the Super Garden itself. What do you find that most people want when they have a garden that really they don't know anything about? They just know they want it to look nicer than it already does. Do you find that most people have ideas in their head, or kind of say, you know, do whatever you like? Or is it much more of a collaboration?
Yeah, it is. A good garden design is a collaboration between the designer and the client. Now, some clients have a very strong idea what they want. They may be gardeners themselves and they may have ideas of what they would like to see in their garden. But generally, I think the job of a designer is to really listen to their clients and, you know, find out what they really need and to help their client envisage what the garden is going to look like when it has been implemented after 3 years, after 5 years.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's not just about that instant garden that you see on Supergarden and you're like, da-da. Exactly. You know, you have to be able to put in the legwork to maintain it and to know that things are going to grow because that's what plants do and that there's enough there that, you know, you're not going to be kind of overrun with triffids at the end of the day. So talk to me then about this year's series. It is taking place in a brand new housing estate.
That's right, in Navan.
In Navan, okay. And these are the homeowners themselves in that housing estate. Lucky them, by the way.
Very lucky. They really are.
Isn't
very,
that fantastic?
Very lucky. Yes.
There'll be no garden envy up there. Everybody will have a fabulous garden. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, a couple of the people you met. Was it what you expected? And were there any surprises?
Okay, well, I suppose what I would say is that the five designers, they were all fantastic. And it's fair to say there's a broad range of ages, which, you know, goes to show that you can get into gardening and garden design no matter what age you are. And the families were lovely, absolutely lovely. And there was a mix of young families with children, young couples who it was their first home, they had no children, but they had pets. So pets had to be taken into consideration.
I saw the first episode features a couple of dog lovers.
Yes.
And they got a Mexican-Irish themed. That's the first episode we're going to see.
I'm
dying to see what that looks like.
Oh, that is... Fela Fiesta is the title of the garden.
Love it.
And Jorge is the designer. And he's a very colourful character. He brought lots of energy and... you know, party theme, not only to the garden, which is what the homeowners were looking for, but also to the process.
I can't wait for the series, Carol. It'll be great. And that is going out on Tuesday, 22nd of April at 7 p.m. on RTE1. And it's a 6-part series. And Carol Marks has all of the secrets in her head. She knows who's won. She's not telling us. You're going to have to tune in yourself. Carol Marks, judge with Supergarden. Thanks for joining
us on
the
show. Thank you so much. And look forward to seeing you at Bloom.
My next guest is going to do exactly the same thing because I think Easter is your favourite time of the year. Jennifer Sheehan, at Workers Cottage on Instagram, if you want to follow along while we're chatting to her. You're very welcome to the studio.
Well, thank you. And it is. It's my favourite time of year, my number one. Let me lay this out for you, right? All you have to do is sit around for the entire weekend eating chocolate. Nothing else is expected. You don't have to buy presents. You don't have to visit anybody. There's no last minute panic shopping. There's no cheesy tunes. Like, it's just... chocolate on the couch. It's amazing. And also, I don't want to jinx anything, but I find there's often at least one good day over the whole Easter weekend. And we go to Achill a lot in our family. If anyone's listening, I know a few of them are up there at the moment. And just that drive across the country, you know, there's blue skies in between showers, maybe.
Ooh,
there's that yellow fir.
I don't know if we're going to be lucky.
It's so lovely.
This
I love
weekend.
It.
All right. Well,
There'll be one blue sky at some stage, I guarantee it, every Easter.
Okay. Well, in design terms, of course, before we get to the Easter table stuff, which I know you're going to cover and give us some tips for designing our Easter table tomorrow, I want to talk about that strangest of colours, the Easter colour, which can be really hard to incorporate into design, and that's yellow.
Yeah.
I don't think I have a single yellow anything in my house. I can't make it work.
Now, it is difficult. I'll give you that. Yellow is hard because it can be overwhelming very quickly.
Mm.
And I think there's a few things to think about. First of all, I will come out and say, aside from Easter, yellow is also my favourite colour, and I have a lot of yellow in my house and I love it. I love
it. Okay.
But I think
it's
we're
a
afraid
brave
of it.
Color.
It's brave.
Mm.
We're afraid of it. We think maybe it's a bit primary school, or you've got some kind of a, you know, yellowy, has a smoker been living here kind of color on the
and
wall.
And it's hard to know what to put with it.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. Okay,
give us some tips.
We'll make it simple. So, very associated with Easter, obviously, with the daffodils, we've the firs or the gorse I talked about, we've our chicks, we've all the sunshine, it's beautiful. And I have what I discovered when I wanted to incorporate it into my home, because I really did, that was actually the first item I chose, was my yellow couch. What I realized is that you need to go a lot darker than you might think, because those bright, cheery yellow colors look really, really nice in tiny little doses. Mm. A little goes a long way. And if you want to use it on a larger surface, you need to go a lot darker than you think. So,
like a mustard.
A mustard. Now, not too brown. We don't have veering into brown. What I have on my yellow sofa is called turmeric. And that's quite a deep, rich, goldeny, browny undertone yellow, but still, you know, still nice and cheery. And the other colour I have that matches perfectly with that is called India Yellow from Farrow and Ball. Now, if you go online and you look up their website or search, you know, India Yellow Farrow and Ball, you'll see a pretty dark colour.
Mm.
And I think that's really what works.
Because it warms it, doesn't it? Whereas the daffodil colour can be just a little bit harsh.
It's harsh and it's actually quite cool. So when we talk about warm and cool colours, that lovely bright yellow colour, it's actually a little bit cool for Irish climates because our light typically is very grey, very cold.
It's not going to enhance it.
You know, sometimes you're on holidays, like you might be in Greece or something, and you see those bright blues and those bright pinks and those bright yellows, and they're so lovely in that sunshine.
They don't
really translate back into Ireland.
Okay, so keep it a warm,
a very warm yellow
and on the kind of darker side of the palette.
Yeah. Now, that's what I will say for your larger surfaces. So if you're going for, you know, if you're painting your walls with a yellow undertone, you want to make sure it's a brown and yellow undertone, for example, or gold and yellow undertone. And same for your couch or same for your door, whatever it might be. If you're looking for the little pops of yellow, then you can go all out. You can go as far as fluorescent, I would say. Like little candle holders, little vases, things like that. You can play around there if you love that brighter yellow.
Yeah.
But just keep it small.
And in that palette, Jenny, does, like if you have a, say, that deeper undertone, that mustardy type colour, and you put maybe a little vase or something in a brighter yellow, does it tie together easily?
What I would always say when you're looking to marry colours is make sure the undertones are similar. So if it's whether it's lighter or darker, try to keep the same undertones. Maybe that's a gold, maybe that's a brown, or maybe it's a green or a blue. But you need to either look online. The good paint specialists will tell you what the undertones are. The other thing you can do to marry it up is just hold a sample up against it. So if you have something that's blue, for example, and you hold it against another colour, you'll be able to see those blue undertones coming through or not. So try to marry the undertones. That's what you need to look for. And then you can have different shades. You can have brighter or darker.
Okay. And if you're matching up with darker shades, the one I'm thinking of immediately with that kind of deep, like a velvet mustard yellow, would be navy.
A dark navy.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'm quite a fan of the colour wheel. It's very basic. Again, if you Google the colour wheel, you'll see it. And, you know, you might even remember it from primary school where you have opposite colours. So they go perfectly together. And they are opposite on the colour wheel. So a yellow and a blue are directly opposite each other. They go great. And if you're going with that really rich, really dark India kind of yellow, navy is amazing. It also pairs very well with green.
Okay, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so lovely, lovely greens as accents, they can go beautifully with it as well.
Yeah. And of course, if you're doing it just for Easter, you know, you can have temporary yellow, you can have big yellow candles, pillar candles,
which is lovely,
and yellow flowers in a, in a bouquet or whatever. And that's, and of course, purple and yellow are the Easter colours, aren't they? And it's lovely in flowers and irises and things like that, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. So that's going for yellow, and just be a little bit careful is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Now, for tablescaping, for people who are having family over to dinner, maybe a leg of lamb, all the tradition. What can we do between today and tomorrow now just to lay out our table and have it looking nice?
I love this topic because, like, I love a lovely tablescape because I think it's perfect for the lazy host, which I can be, because you can just make your table look amazing and sure, the food can be grand then, you know. But I also have no storage space. So I don't like having, you know, I don't want to have specific shaped saucers or chicken shaped, you know, salt and pepper shakers, whatever it might be. So keep it simple. Keep it about things that are easy to store. The best you can do is consumables. So this is the perfect time if you're hosting tomorrow. Go out and buy a bunch of those little chocolate bunnies or little, you know, whatever, chick-shaped chocolates and dot those around the place. And that looks great. I do this at Christmas as well. You know, the lint bunnies or the lint Santas.
Just a little surprise to have it there.
Those dotted around is so nice. It's really, it's a, you know, lovely feeling of abundance and that's really, really nice. The other thing that's really helpful then is lovely kind of pastel-y or bright coloured tablecloths and napkins. There's some beautiful, beautiful ones in Foxford. They've got gorgeous, gorgeous ones at the moment. Lovely little kind of ticking stripes and a really nice Easter colour. Mm. And they're easy to store and you can layer them in different ways then at different holiday seasons. So that looks lovely.
And the pastels work so well this time of year, you know. So you're not stuck with yellow. You can look at the pale pinks and the pale blues and the little pale, you know, the little sage green kind
of thing. They're so nice. Yeah. They're so pretty. There's a lovely one in a rose stripe from Foxford and it's only €19. It's little, it's really, really nice.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's really handy is flowers. So I'm not a massive flower person, but around Easter, around holidays, it's a great way to bring in colours that you want to bring in temporarily, but that, you know, you don't necessarily want to keep or to store. Tulips are amazing, gerber daisies. And I'm going to give a massive shout out here because the vases are important. And if you're like me and you have a tiny home and you're storage challenged, I found these vases. I'm absolutely obsessed. They're from a company called Octavo, O-C-T-A-E-V-O. They're flat paper vases. They're made from a waterproof paper.
Mm.
They store away flat. And what you do is you open them up and you slot in a jar or a cup or something you've lying around the house anyway.
Right.
And they surround it. And you can get them in lots of different colours. They're not expensive. You know, you can get them.
And reusable.
Yeah, and they're reusable. And then when you need to store them, you just fold them away again. And
how clever.
And this is
how
my favourite tip now for holiday decorations. And then, of course, candles themselves. As you mentioned, those lovely, tall, you know, tapered candles. Sostrina Greena. I'll never pronounce that.
Sostrina. Right. Oh, Sostrina Green is fantastic.
They have the most beautiful range of pastels.
You lose the run of yourself in there, though. It's like IKEA. You go in just to buy one thing and you come out with bagfuls.
I'm helpless when I go in there.
Okay, so don't have to stick to the yellow for the yellow phobes among us, like me, but certainly those lovely, gentle pastel colours and very, very sustainable and very, it can all be put away.
It can all be put away. And you can repurpose some things as well. You know, you could take some fairy lights from Christmas, for example, and dot those around, or ribbons are a lovely thing. You can just tie them onto some existing things. You know, I think reuse, repurpose is
wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. Well, you've inspired us all, Jenny, as ever. And I hope you folks out there are doing something nice tomorrow. Now, if you're not cooking a dinner, that's absolutely fine. Go to a pub or go for a nice walk or whatever. And most of all, have a wonderful, wonderful, peaceful Easter break. And that goes for you too, Jenny.
Thank
and I hope you,
you
have a lovely time. And I hope, you know, the chocolate fairy, the Easter bunny comes along and leaves you lots of chocolate. And that's all we have time for on the latest episode of The Home Show Pod. I do hope you enjoyed it and got a little bit of Easter vibe off it. And I hope that you have an absolutely fantastic weekend. If there's any aspects of it you've missed or any of the shows you've missed in the past, they're all up on podcast. Of course, wherever you got this show from, but also on newstalk.com or on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Thanks to producer Aoife Breen. Stephen McLoone was on sound. And we will see you all next weekend. And we'll be in May already.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Saturday morning at 8 on Newstalk.